Letters.
On Singapore, Arab armies, China, romantasy, immigration and car names.
Land use in Singapore.
From Dr. Andrew Purvis, Research Fellow, Bartlett School of Planning, University College, London. The list of measures through which Lee Kuan Yew transformed Singapore should also include the public ownership of land. Article, New Management in Singapore, May 11th. The Land Acquisition Act of 1966 allowed the state to acquire land for any public purpose at existing use value. By 2002, 90% was in public ownership and had been used to create industrial and commercial parks, affordable housing, and outstanding public infrastructure, including a first-class airport and a shipping port. The leasehold premiums paid continue to contribute substantially to the investment income coming from Temasek and other state fund managers, now contributing 20% of the country's operating budget, which incidentally does not suffer the burden of interest on debt. Lee was determined that any uplift in land value after development, especially when facilitated by public investment, would accrue to the state rather than public interests. Land is perhaps a country's most valuable asset, and its value, distinct from the earnings from productive investment placed on it, should be used to defray the public expenses, as supported by Adam Smith, John Stuart Mill, Milton Friedman, Joseph Stiglitz, and others. State ownership of land is not essential. The value of land can be collected through an annual levy on its rental value, leaving entrepreneurs and homeowners with the security of tenure granted by their titles.
Military vanity projects.
From Andrea Cellino, Senior Fellow, Head of North Africa Middle East Institute, Switzerland, Geneva. Why are Arab armed forces so ineffective, you asked. Article, Land of the Lousy, May 11th. One important factor is the lack of governance. The most effective armies in the world are subject to proper governance. In democratic systems, public oversight of the security sector ensures that money is well spent and military leaderships are accountable to citizens. In some autocratic systems, such as China or Russia, rulers ensure that competent civil servants oversee the military apparatus to make them fit for purpose. Yet their armies are still less efficient than liberal democratic ones. In the Middle East, no governance systems or controls are in place. As you said, Arab leaders often splurge on vanity equipment to gain influence with Western partners. In fact, those vanity decisions remain unchallenged by the checks and balances of a democratic system. In some cases, such as Egypt or Algeria, the armed forces in effect rule the country in a way that puts the political system at their service and not the other way round. Either way, Arab leaders are ruling but not governing.
China is setting the rules.
From Patrice Flynn, Distinguished University Professor, Bolt School of Business, Mount St. Mary's University, Emmitsburg, Maryland. Your briefing on the unravelling of the international rules-based order that has governed the global economy since the Second World War is a must-read in every course on global business, international studies and geopolitics. Article, The Great Regression, May 11th. I challenge your conclusion, however, that once the existing system is broken, it is unlikely to be replaced by other directives. A new form of global capitalism is in the making, which includes new rules of the game set by Beijing. See, for example, the Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank and the New Development Bank that bypass traditional multilateral financial institutions the China International Commercial Court to adjudicate legal disputes, China's stamp on the International Maritime Organization's standards, Chinese-operated special economic zones that avoid local laws and governance, and China's digital sovereignty laws targeting infrastructure, data and internet protocol. There is something to be learned from the Chinese 21st century experiment in global capitalism, as unsettling as that may be for the established world order.
A promise of fire.
From Peg Healy, Albany, California. Novels combining fantasy and romance exist in a continuum of excellence and originality, as does most fiction. Some romantasy authors can be relied on to produce novels that are extremely well written, with dense, fresh plots, engaging and developing characters and clever dialogue. You might have mentioned article Feeling Horny, May 4th, as further examples of the genre, the award-winning series of Shaunan Maguire and the sexier output from the Ilona Andrews husband and wife writing team.
How immigrants contribute.
From Wayne Cornelius, Director Emeritus, Center for Comparative Immigration Studies, University of California, San Diego. Measuring the skills of immigrants tells us little about how they are actually being incorporated into the economy. Article, Thousands Are Flying, May 4th. A substantial portion of immigrants are filling essential worker jobs regardless of their education level. The economy would function poorly without them. Economic growth would be constrained. There would be huge negative impacts in industries with labour shortages such as childcare and healthcare. Using skills as a measure also ignores intergenerational mobility. The wide literature on the improvements in income and occupational status achieved by the second and third generation members of immigrant families suggests that the cascading fiscal impacts are net positive. The big picture is that America, like most of Europe, has entered a period of sustained labour scarcity, with a shrinking population of young, working-age, native-born residents and a birth rate well below the replacement level. Viewed in this larger context, why quibble over how much human capital immigrants bring us when they step off the plane?
And the Nissan Friend Me.
From Peter Kane, Trier, Germany. When it comes to asinine car names, article Mark to Market, May 18th, the VW Up is in a league of its own, thanks to that enigmatic exclamation mark. The Dacia Duster always raises a laugh. The Kia Sportage sounds like a healthy broth that might be served to the mayor of Casterbridge.
From Tim Franks, London. Your article on unfortunate car names was only slightly dimmed by one omission. As the BBC's Middle East correspondent in Jerusalem, I drove a Mitsubishi Pajero, which, as far as much of my audience and many in the region were concerned, was all too appropriate.
From Seth Frankel, Luxembourg City. The Audi e-tron is similar to the French word étron, which translates to excrement or turd, neither of which is particularly enticing for a car. Then again, if the car doesn't work well, the dealer can always say you knew you bought a load of crap.
From Marc Sadoff, La Garenne Colombe, France. The Audi e-tron, oddly, has not caused much of a stink here.